Kowalski glanced at her, then looked back at Prentice and said, "What's this all about, Tom? Did somebody tell the general what Charlie's really doing here?"
"I don't know what he's really doing here," Prentice said, "but I'll take my chances about learning that, too. Start with the desert, please, Pete."
"It would help if I knew what this is all about, Tom."
"Okay. A source in whom Miss Wilson places a good deal of faith has implied that the only reason Castillo was in an Apache in the desert was because his father had the Medal of Honor."
"Absolutely true," Kowalski said. He shook his head. "Jesus Christ, I'd pretty much forgotten that."
Beth flashed Prentice a triumphant glance. Then Kowalski went on.
"What happened was a week, maybe 10 days before we went over the berm, the old man, Colonel Stevens." He was then a light colonel.
Prentice nodded.
"Stevens called me in and said I wasn't going to believe what he was going to tell me."
"Which was?" Prentice said.
"That I was about to have a new co-pilot. That said new co-pilot had a little over 300 hours total time, 40 of which was in the Apache, and had been in the Army since last June when he'd graduated from West Point. And the explanation for this insanity was that this kid's father had won the Medal of Honor, and they thought it would make a nice story for the newspapers that the son of a Medal of Honor guy had been involved in the first action, etc. Get the point?"
"Now, Tom, isn't that very much what Randy said?" Beth asked in an artificially sweet tone.
"I'm not finished," Kowalski said. "Tom said I was to tell you what happened."
"Oh, please do."
"Well, I shortly afterward met Second Lieutenant Charlie Castillo," Kowalski continued. "And he was your typical bushy-tailed West Point Second John. He was going to win the war all by himself. But I also picked up that he was so dumb that he had no idea what they were doing to him. And I sort of liked him, right off. He was like a puppy, wagging his tail and trying to please. So because of that, and because I was deeply interested in preserving my own skin, I spent a lot of time in the next week or whatever it was giving him a cram course in the Kowalski method of Apache flying. He wasn't a bad pilot. He just didn't have the Apache time, the experience. And then we went over the berm, and what did Castillo say? There we were, flying over the Iraqi desert at Old Dark Hundred with people shooting at us. What we were doing was taking out Iraqi air defense radar. If the radar didn't work, they not only couldn't shoot at the Air Force, but they wouldn't even know where it was. I was flying, and Charlie was shooting. He was good at that. And like he said, he wasn't the world's best Apache pilot. And then some raghead got lucky. I don't think they were shooting at us. What I think happened was they were shooting in the air, and we ran into it. Anyway, I think it was probably an explosive-headed 30-millimeter that hit us. It came through my windshield, and all of a sudden I was blind. And I figured, oh, fuck." He glanced at Beth Wilson. "Sorry. I figured, we're going in. The kid'll be so shook up he'll freeze and never even think of grabbing the controls. Did I mention we lost intercom? And we're going to fly into the sand pile about as fast as an Apache will fly. And then, all of a sudden, I sense that he is flying, the son of a bitch. That what he's trying to do is gain a little altitude so that he can set it down someplace where the ragheads aren't. And then I sense, like I said, I can't see a goddamn thing, that he's flying the bird, that he's trying to go home."
"When he really should have been trying to land?" Beth asked.
"Yeah, when he really should have been trying to land," Kowalski said. "When most pilots would have tried to land."
"Then why didn't he?"
"Because when he had to wipe my blood from his helmet visor, he figured, damned rightly, that if he set it down, even if there were no ragheads waiting to shoot us, which there were, it would be a long time before anybody found us and I would die. From the way the bird was shaking, from the noise it was making, I thought that we were going to die anyway, The bird was either going to come apart or blow up.
So he should have landed then.
Either I'm not making myself clear, young lady, or you don't want to hear what I'm saying, Kowalski said, not pleasantly. If Charlie had set it down, he would have lived, and maybe I wouldn't have. He knew that all those long miles back to across the berm, and he had enough time in rotary wing aircraft to think what I was thinking. Any second now, this son of a bitch is going to come apart and we'll both die. Knowing that, he kept flying. In case there is any question in your mind, I am the founding member of the Charlie Castillo fan club.
That's a very interesting story, Beth said.
Well, you asked for it. I don't know where you got your story, but you got it wrong.
What happened then, Pete? Prentice asked.
Well, when I got out of the hospital, I wasn't hurt as bad as it looked. There's a lot of blood in the head, and I lost a lot, and that's what blinded me. I went looking for him, but he was already gone. I asked around and found out that when the public relations guys learned that Colonel Stevens had put Charlie in for the Impact Award of the DFC, which he damned sure deserved, that and the Purple Heart, because he'd taken some shrapnel in his hands, they had arranged to have him flown to Riyadh so that General Schwarzkopf could personally pin the awards on him. A picture of that would really have gotten in all the newspapers. But at Riyadh, one of the brass, I heard it was General Naylor, who was Schwarzkopf's operations officer. He just got put in for a third star. They're giving him V-Corps. I saw that in the Army Times. I know who he is, Prentice said. Kowalski nodded. Anyway, someone took a close look at his second lieutenant, fresh from West Point, flying in Apache, and decided something wasn't kosher. What I heard first was that Charlie had been reassigned to fly Hueys for some civil affairs outfit to get him out of the line of fire, so to speak.
I don't understand what you heard first, Beth interrupted.
Then I heard, Kowalski went on, ignoring her while looking at Prentice. What Charlie was really doing was flying Scotty McNabb around the desert in a Huey. The story I got was that was the only place Naylor thought he could stash him, safe from the public relations guys, who couldn't wait to either put Charlie back in an Apache or send him on a speech-making tour.
You said something before, Pete, about what Castillo is really doing here? Prentice asked.
You really don't know?
Prentice shook his head.
And the general doesn't know either? Or maybe heard something?
Why the questions?
I don't know what you're talking about, Prentice said.
I heard he was getting blue flight transition into the King Air. Then I think we should leave it there, if you don't mind.